Welcome to Tall, Dark, and Fictional, a podcast about romance fiction by romance writers. I'm Kat Wynn.
And I'm S.J. Tilley.
And today we have an amazing guest. This is actually a huge guest for me because her writing is super, super influential to my writing. So welcome to the podcast, Jessica Brody. Jessica, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. So I don't know, where do I start? I wrote a book called Save the Cat Writes a Novel, which is probably why I'm here. Yeah. But the way I got to writing Save the Cat Writes a Novel was I wrote about 20 novels before that, including some of the titles are Sky Without Stars, A Week of Mondays, 52 Reasons to Hate My Father. None of them are actually romance. I write mostly young adult and middle grade. But yeah, I've been following this method, this storytelling method called Save the Cat for my entire career. And so it only made sense to actually write about how I use Save the Cat because it's originally a screenwriting guide and I translated it to novels. And that's how I, that's pretty much why I'm here.
It's actually very funny. So I originally read Blake Snyder's Saves the Cat, like as a screenplay writer. And I've never written a screenplay in my life, like never even really like aspired to it. But there wasn't really like anything else like it out there. And so when I found your book, and I have my copy here, and it's really old. How many years ago did you originally publish
it? It came out in 2018.
Okay, I feel like it was so much longer ago than that for some reason.
At this point, 5 years has been a long time. You know,
COVID time is like a different time.
Time goes so quickly. So, okay, well then I must have gotten this like the day it published, and because I have read this thing so many times. But when I got your book, Saves a Cat Writes a Novel, that opened up novel writing for me. But specifically, because I'm a freak, I also got the audiobook, and I listened to it one day while I was like on a really long drive, and I was like, oh my God, I know how to like solve this book I'm writing right now. And because I did that, I finished the book, and that was my first traditionally published book. So that was all thanks to you and the book that you wrote. So personally, thank you.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear. And I think it's awesome that the audiobook really clicked for you because I'm an audiobook fan. I pretty much consume everything with audio. It's just the way I learn best. So when I was asked to actually record the audiobook, I was secretly like hoping that they would let me. But I had no audiobook experience. And so when I got the email that's like, do you want to do it? I was like,
You did the narration?
I did the narration, yeah. Which was like, as an audiobook fan, it was like a dream come true. And it was so much fun. So it means a lot to me that the audiobook had an impact on you. Because it's always like a little weird doing something new like that.
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny because I think like that kind of led me down. It was like dominoes, you know, like falling one after the other. Because first I got the Blake Snyder book, then I got yours, then I got the audiobook. Then I found you on YouTube. And then I was like, I don't know, I'm just a real freak. Like once I get into something, I'm like, this is my path and I'm going down it. And then I found your writing mastery class. And then I was like, this is speaking to me so much, like all of it. And I know that all people are different. And I personally have a neurodivergent brain, admittedly. So like my brain might be a little off, but for whatever reason, the way you spell things out and the way that you are, I would say you're almost like a little bit handholdy with the steps to writing a novel. And I think that's going to lead me to my first question. It's a big question. And I know like you answer all the time, but why is writing a novel so hard?
I don't know if I've ever actually been asked it that way
really?
Before. Good question. It's funny because that's often an answer to most questions is like, I'll get these like long, long winded questions where someone will, and I love questions. This is not a knock on any question.
Yeah.
I love getting questions from writers. And that's one of the reasons I opened the Writing Mastery Academy so I could like help other writers. But I'll get these really long winded questions where basically someone's just spelling out the answer, writing a novel is hard. Yeah. Because they'll just, you know, go on and on about like, this isn't working and why isn't, what do I do here? And I'm like, yeah, writing a novel is hard.
Yes.
Go figure.
So yeah, so it's an interesting now to like kind of turn it around and have to answer that. But thank you for saying all that. I'm so, so happy to hear that. I love being handheld. I find Same. That the nonfiction books that speak to me the most are the ones that give me like step-by-step processes. And so I'm like, give me the process and I will follow it.
Yeah.
So that's probably why Save the Cat spoke to me so well, the original book, because it's basically just a 15-step blueprint on how to write a compelling story that I turned into writing a novel. I think the same reason that any story is hard, novel writing is its own beast. And I don't want to say it's harder than screenplay writing because I don't have a lot of experience writing screenplays either. But given the length of it and the complexity, and we just have so many more words to write than a screenwriter, I would imagine that it, you know, has its own levels of complexity. But I think storytelling in general is just hard because we are inventing something from scratch. And we are like on this journey of discovery. And I think any project you tackle that hasn't already been done, which is essentially any novel you write, whether you're like retelling an old classic or you're inventing something completely different, you are still discovering something that does not exist. And to make all those pieces fit together is just a massive puzzle. Mm-hmm. And the part that I love about novel writing is finding those pieces, which for me happens in the first draft. It's like I outline, I think I've got it all figured out. And then I start writing and I'm like, I have nothing figured out. And all of these pieces start appearing out of nowhere that I'm like, what am I going to do with this piece? So I love the process of writing the first draft because I kind of think of that as like amassing the pieces. Like, let's just collect all these pieces. I don't care where they go yet. I don't know where they go yet. I just want to amass them into a pile. And then the revision process is like going through the pieces that I've amassed one by one. Be like, you know what? This would fit better over here. Or no, I don't need this piece at all and throw it away. But I just think that discovery process is both delightful and also impossibly challenging sometimes. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're describing exactly how I now go about writing, which it's the same thing. And I think the reason, like I'll answer the question I asked, the answer that I posed. One of the reasons I think it's hard to write a novel is because, yes, the discovery process is so huge. And in the midst of it, it's like cleaning out your closet. It's like you take everything out and you're like, oh, fuck, I fucked up. Like, I shouldn't have taken everything out of my closet. Like that was a big mistake. And now I don't know what to do with all of it. And there's this like desire to give up in the middle of the mess. And that is like human nature, right? To be like, I'm overwhelmed, or that is my human nature. I'm overwhelmed. Yeah. Like I'm leaving this room. Goodbye. Like no more writing for me. But really, you know, I guess it's like trusting the process and being like, the more you pick through it, the more you sit with it, the more you find and get rid of, then the more likely you are to finish the story, which is the goal, right? And then also the goal is to make money.
Secondary.
So how many people have we talked to, other authors and then people that are not published authors? Almost, I feel like a good percentage of the population has started writing a book of some sort and has not finished it, right? So like clearly this is a normal struggle that everyone goes through to some degree, whether you publish or not, because it's overwhelming, right? Like it's a novel. It's an entire fucking novel. Like that's a lot to like write and keep track of no matter how many times you've done it. But I do think, you know, as we've all done, right? Like with practice, it gets a wee bit easier, even if it's still a whole process.
Yeah. And I tell people that all the time. They're like, does it get easier? And I say it gets easier only in that you know what to expect in the hard. So like, you know that it's going to be hard. I think when you first start a novel, I mean, maybe some people are like, I know this is going to be a bitch and I'm not going to be able to do it, or it's going to really challenge me. But I think most people go into it with either like a healthy sense of ignorance or like a unhealthy sense of ignorance. Yeah. Some level of ignorance of like, how hard could it be? I've read lots of novels. I know what's wrong with them and I don't. Or some people just go in completely terrified and that's fine too. But I think there is like a level of ignorance, and I think there sort of has to be, otherwise you will never start a novel. Yep. If you kind of feel that overwhelm. So I think with the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, you sort of know what to expect and you just expect it to be hard, so that when those hard points come, and they come for me, they come at all different times. Like I've written, you know, like whatever, 25 novels now, and none of them have had the same challenges. And I think it just, you just, when you hit a challenge, you go, oh, here's a challenge. I know I can get past this. But I love your messy room analogy, because I feel like it works so well. The more rooms you venture into and take on cleaning, the easier it becomes, and just that, you know, this is a mess, but I will get through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like systems can be created, and that you've seen things before, and that, you know, okay, something's messy now, but like, I know that in an hour it can be clean, or whatever the case, or never for me. And I just hire somebody to come into my house. that breaks the analogy. So something that you said also that really spoke to me, and you brought it up just now, and I think it's like a lot of your courses that you have on the Writing Mastery Academy. Writing Mastery Academy, right? I get that right? Mm-hmm.
Every time. Yeah,
I
thank you.
I struggle with those words. I don't know why. Is that like the challenges will be different each time you write. And it really is about like emotionally like stealing yourself and like building up like some emotional endurance with it. But I didn't know that when I started writing. Like, and I was an English major in college. Were you an English major in college, Jessica?
No, I was an econ major.
That's fucking weird. I don't even, I know it said that and I just forgot. Okay. Did you ever consider it?
It is weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, did you ever consider being like a creative writing major or anything like that?
I mean, I always loved writing. I just was so, I was way too practical to like pursue it. I was, it was always like, oh, that's something you do on the side. It's not something you actually do to make money. And then eventually I quit my big corporate financial analyst job to pursue a career in writing. So joke's on me.
You're like, and I am that person. But then you delivered a very practical guide on how to do writing. And let me go back to what I was saying before. Okay, so like every time you write, there are different challenges. I'm actually going through that right now. And I think, tell me if you agree with this. I think one of the reasons also you find different challenges when from book to book is because every time you write a new book, you kind of like level up in your writing. And so you're never really going to be at like a stasis.
I absolutely agree with that. And that's actually what I say too. You'll always have another challenge because you're always a better writer. And even if you don't feel like it, you know, what's the word? It's like when you first start out, you have the unconscious incompetence, and then you grow to like having conscious incompetence. And then hopefully you get to be like competent, but at the same time, there's always an incompetence somewhere. And I think that's because we challenge ourselves. Like, you know, I went from writing like 300 page, like contemporary comedies for teens. And then I decided I'm going to write a sci-fi retelling of Les Miserables, which is a trilogy that's over like, I think it's like 2000 pages for the whole trilogy. And it's like a whole, there's like worlds. And I mean, it's really complex. But if I were just to write the same book over and over, I think one, I would get bored with that. But also I just don't think it would challenge me creatively. And I think that's why we write, is because we like to be challenged creatively.
I do like the unconscious incompetence, or if however that was said, because that's too, like, it's so true. Like when I wrote my first book too, I'm like, when I finished, I'm like, this is amazing. Like this can't get any better. And then like now I go back to it and I'm like,
saying that you thought that about your own writing.
I'm very cocky apparently. But then like you go back and you're like, oh, I would have done so many things differently. You know, and I feel like every book, because it's always, people always ask, and I'll ask you too, like, what's the favorite book you've written? For me, it's always the last one I wrote, because I feel that's the best.
For me, it's always the one I'm gonna write next.
that is accurate.
Favorite. Yeah, that one's perfect in my mind. I will never like live up to that expectation, I actually have to agree. The first book I ever wrote was like a masterpiece, and I never sold. I couldn't get an agent, like, and you know, and it's funny, I look back at it now and I look at the rejection letters I got and I was like, yeah, you were right to reject this. This was a piece of
crap. But they're not always right.
No, they're not always right. Oh, but no. On many cases they were right.
But sometimes things are objectively correct. Yeah. Do you experience this phenomenon of like one day you read something you've written and you're like, that is beautiful. And like an hour later you read it again and you're like, that is a nightmare. Like what a mess. And maybe this is like a good reason not to reread your work too much, only while editing, you know?
That right there.
Yeah. I try not to reread anything while I'm drafting. You know, that's a method that I've created, and I have a course about it. It's called fast drafting. But
I did it.
Oh, good. We can talk about that later. Too.
Yes.
So I try really hard not to reread stuff unless I'm just kind of reminding myself of what I wrote, so I know what I have to write next. But I don't know if I have the experience of like reading something and then rereading it an hour later just because of the method. But I do feel like there are times when I will write something and be like, oh, that's just, you know, a work of art. And then I'll get to like the revision stage and I'll be like, this is crap.
Yes.
this is terrible. And the reverse is true too. Like I will write something and be like, oh, that was, you know, I'll finish a chapter and go, that was a mess. And then I'm actually in the process now of just reviewing my very messy first draft in preparation to revise it. And I'm surprised at some of the chapters that I thought were working really well. I'm like, this whole chapter is going to go. And the chapters where I was like, I have no idea what's happening right now, they are actually working better than I thought.
Tell me a little bit about this messy first draft you're talking about. Like, I am also, I just finished a first draft and I did it doing your fast drafting method, which I absolutely love. And I recommended it to a friend, our friend Gabby Marie, who's also a writer, G Marie. She did the same thing. Like, she took the course too, and like the same thing. And SJ, technically you're kind of a fast drafter, I will say that. So like, you also just get your draft done very, very quickly. And then you're like, you're just like trying to get it out. But okay, how messy is messy? Like, how much are we talking putting in the work? Like, I just cut out 20,000 words of a draft I'd written. So mine are messy, if that tells you anything.
Yeah, I think messy is definitely a relative term. And I think it just, you know, it comes with a lot of variables. And I think some of the variables are how fast can you recognize that things aren't working? How experienced are you in that type of story? How many characters do you have? Because sometimes when you have too many characters, you end up with a lot of stuff you don't need, things like that. So I just think there's a lot of variables. And I think some drafts are messier than others. You know, so just if people aren't familiar with it, the fast drafting method is essentially, you know, at the beginning, we were talking about the discovery process. So if every draft, regardless of whether you outline or don't, if every draft is a discovery process for you to just find all of these pieces to the puzzle, then the philosophy behind fast drafting is, what if you just did that part faster? If you just discovered faster, you could get to the point where you had all the puzzle pieces and now you could try to, you know, fit them together. So fast drafting is essentially writing, always writing forward, never going back to edit. And then it uses a strategy that I call invisible revising, which is essentially when you reach a point in your story where you're like, I have to make this change, instead of going back to where it was in the story and changing it. And then that means you're writing backward and you're spending all this time, you know, making it work. You move forward as if you already did that change. So it ends up with a draft that is very nonsensical because you're changing direction in the middle. You're adding like characters who don't even exist in the first part, but you're writing as if it did. And you're just leaving a lot of notes for yourself. And that's probably the messiest thing of all of my drafts, is just the amount of notes. And I use the comment feature in Word. And it's just like every page is just like comment, 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 comment. So instead of actually going back and doing those things, I just leave the note. And the thing that really confirmed fast drafting for me, and of course, it's no strategy is right for everyone. But the thing that really validated it for me was the first time I did it, I went back. So every time I thought, oh, I'm going to make this change, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do this. Instead of doing that, I left myself just a comment right there. Go back and plant this in chapter two. When I went back and read all those comments, half of them didn't apply anymore because I had changed it again, like two pages later or two chapters later. And so I realized like I had just saved myself all of that work because I would have gone and done it and then I would have had to change it again. So it's like kind of gave me that evidence that it was a process that worked for me. So in terms of the mess, like I will say that the one I'm going, I have it like really clear in my head now because I'm going through, I mean, I'm restructuring about half of the book at this point, okay. Like moving stuff around.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about, I would say it's about half of what it needs to be. And that's so about a half mess. I don't know. But then there's like stuff that actually works where it is, but I have to rewrite the scene, you know, to make it just better. So it's sort of hard to rate to the quantify. Mess. But
yeah. Do you ever write yourself a note? Because this is what I'll do. I'll just write a note and I'll say something like, make funny, you know, like, or like in brackets, put joke here.
Yeah, all the time. Punch,
yeah, right? And because I guess like since writing is so solitary, we don't realize that like people don't just come up with brilliant things automatically all the time. Like sometimes it comes to you automatically, but a lot of times it's just, it's fucking sweat equity. It's like putting your elbow grease into it. It's like rewriting over and over, like you're saying. But the fast drafting method, totally transformational to me, for me.
Oh, great.
So
that's great.
Transformational, yeah. And I am like such a simp. Listen to me on this podcast. That's what I'm an evangelist when I like things. So
and we're going to pan to the shrine that she has of Jessica in well, the I corner do- of the room.
I mean, I did like sign up for everything she had. So yeah. And I like can't stress enough how like emotionally rooted things like writer's block really are, like, and how it becomes like such an executive function error when you can't figure an answer out to something and then it stops you from writing. So something like fast drafting, it kind of like takes out the emotional heaviness of it. And it's like, don't worry about it. The answers will come. I really wrestled with that. Like I am still kind of like learning that in general, you know, like now though I can finish draft. The first book I ever finished was the book I published. So if that is like to people, please just finish your drafts. Okay. Returning back. So another kind of back to basics questions about Saves the Cat, which is why are beats hard to identify?
Oh, wow. good question. You have some stumpers today. I feel like there are beats that are easier to identify than others because they're beats that naturally turn the plot. So like the catalyst, which is a beat that comes usually around 10% of the way through the story. And that's, you know, people call it the inciting incident, the life-changing event. And because it's so life-changing, or it should be, it's pretty easy to spot when you're reading a novel. Where it gets kind of tricky is like if you have two catalysts, which some novels will have, where you're like, is that the catalyst? Is that the catalyst? Typically, most of the time, the answer is usually both. Mm-hmm. And that's, we call that a double bump in the Save the Cat language. But then there are other beats that I think are really, if they're done well, they're actually not supposed to be identified very easily. And that's like the theme stated beat, which usually comes like between typically around the 5% mark or somewhere within act one. And that's where like the author will, or the screenwriter will subtly plant a nod or a hint to the theme of the whole story. And the whole point of this beat is to kind of hide it, because what you want to do is you want to plant a very subtle seed in the reader's mind that this is the kind of journey we're on. This is the question I'm meaning to answer. This is the wrong I'm meaning to write through my character's transformative arc and all of that. And if you're so overt about it, then your reader is just going to feel like they're kind of being tapped, like hit on the head or like lectured to. And funny thing about that beat is my last novel, my most recent novel, which comes out on March 28th, it's called Amelia Gray Is Almost Okay, and it's a middle grade. I actually wrote in a theme stated that I thought was like so brilliant. And my editor, who doesn't follow Save the Cat, or maybe she's read it, I don't know, but she doesn't like edit me based on the beats. She just like highlighted this line and she's like, this is a little like didactic.
She's like, on the nose.
This is a little on the nose is basically what she said. And I was like, well, didn't do that theme stated very well. And so I had to go back and like restate the theme in a little bit more of a subtle way, which hopefully it is now. But so that beat's not meant to be found easily. It's more meant to be alluded to. And then there's other beats that are just sort of, you know, I think the All Is Lost is pretty easy to spot. That's another kind of big life-changing event that happens usually at the 75% mark. I think people, in terms of like, let me ask you the question, like, which beats do you think are hard to spot?
I'm going to start with this, which is to say, even though I follow the beats, I truly could not repeat them back to you without looking at it. But I have them right in front of me. Definitely, when you said theme stated, yes, that one, I think about that one all the time when I'm writing, because it's like, specifically, you know, like some side character says it, and they say like some offhanded comment, and then it circles back around at the end, and you're like, the light bulb goes on, and like everybody's like, oh my God. And it's like that Pixar moment where you start crying or whatever. It's like, you know, so that is such a, like, if done well, is such a like a beautiful moment in a story that I think I really, really struggle to get correctly. Mm-hmm. But like, as far as just like pulling out the beats, I think I always tend to, so like the break into two makes sense to me because it's like the journey accepted or whatever, mm-hmm. by the character, and you know, because the world has changed. I think it gets tricky when things break into three. Is that the other one I'm thinking about? Right, let's see. Yeah, the break into three, and then there's like the 5-point finale. That at that point I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like, once I get to that, I'm like, I don't know if I'm writing that correctly. Like, I feel like I'm doing, like, also towards like, that's part of the writing process. That's like, if I get to that point in my book, I feel like that's when I'm like really going fast and like things are kind of like popping off, if I've set everything up correctly in the beginning, which I haven't always. But yeah. Then I'm just, that's when things get really jumbled for me. me because I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if they did all the things they were supposed to do. Like, yeah, you know, and I don't know why I can't. And maybe it's just with practice for me, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny is like, I think a lot of people struggle with the 5-point finale. It's actually, the 5-point finale was actually in Blake Snyder, who wrote the original book. It was an answer to people complaining that the finale beat in the original book was very vague. So he wrote this book, Save the Cat, and he basically wrote, and in the finale, everything's wrapped up. And then you have your end, right? And yeah, everyone was like, thanks a lot. What are we supposed to do that? So in his third book called Save the Cat Strikes Back, he actually introduced this idea of the 5-point finale, which are like little subbeats that you can use to help you with the finale. I think they're very helpful. And I saw the 5-point finale, I started to see it everywhere. I was like, oh yeah, that's in this movie and that's in this book. Here's what I have to say about the finale, though, is I don't typically write my finales until my second draft. And I talk about this a little bit in the course, the fast drafting course, but it's one thing that, and I kind of give people permission if this is your issue as well. Sometimes I find like when you write a super messy draft, it is hard to pull everything together because nothing is where it's supposed to be yet. Mm-hmm. And so when you sometimes to force yourself to write a messy third draft is just not very helpful. So I kind of give myself, I give my students permission. I call it the 3/4 exception. And that's basically like, if you want to stop at the all is lost, go back and start piecing things together so you know what you need to resolve by the end. That's fine. But I, you know, it always comes with a warning of like, don't do it just because you're ready to give up. Do it because you're like, okay, this isn't making any sense. I have to get this in the right order so I know. And that's pretty much what I do in every single draft. I write the first draft is usually just the first 3/4 of the book. And then I write the finale when I do the second draft.
Interesting. I do recall this now that you said that.
It might help you. It might help you. If you're sort of like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's probably because your story is just so out of order and so messy that it's like really hard to fit those pieces together in any cohesive way.
Yeah. Cause it's really like the conclusion of everything you've written. And if everything you've written is just like a bunch of puzzle pieces that have been thrown onto a table, you're like, well, we're not going to be able to put that final piece of the blue sky in or whatever. It's just not gonna happen.
Exactly.
This actually does like really speak to my soul, even when you're saying that, even though I've heard all of this, like hearing it again, that's a question. Why does it take so many times to hear or learn something?
It's funny because you said like going back to the book and you're like, I don't know the beat. I couldn't tell you the beats, but I've got them in front of me. I mean, I have lived and breathed these beats for however long because I not just wrote this book, but I used to teach the method. I've blogged about the method. Like I do webinars about the method. So this is where I live. And I think it's sort of just what you, when you know what you know. And like, I think in the beats. I mean, and I have to remind myself that not everybody thinks the way that I think in, you know, not everyone can just like identify the beats, but it's only because I just practice and practice and practice. And I've broken down so many novels. Can't even tell you how many novels I've broken down. So I'm just really versed in finding these puzzle pieces. So I wouldn't get too down on yourself for that because it's like, it's basically like saying to a, you know, master pianist, like, how do you just play something? Well, it's because I do every single day. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. As long as you have your cheat sheets and you have your system that works for you and you need to be reminded of it, I think that's fine.
Yeah. And some of this stuff I like inherently know, like, and you inherently remember the hang of. But yeah, I think it's always kind of like the good rule of thumb is like, be gentle with yourself while writing. I guess that's all, like, kind of accept your messiness and weirdness. And that's what's going to be true.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
So we care about feelings here.
We do. We try. When you say, you know, everyone has a different process and it's always so fascinating. And I love listening to the both of you talk about this in the way that like you both do it and you both fully understand it and like it works to everybody. The idea of stopping at 75% going back stresses like I can feel like my heart, like the stress of that, like I cannot, like it's but it's, everyone has a different process and it's so fascinating, but it's super amazing that you can have people that can really connect with it.
Let me switch gears a little bit from the Saves the Cat stuff so I don't totally like, are you just so tired of talking about it sometimes, to be honest?
No, actually, I okay. love talking about it. And okay. it's to the, you know, to the detriment of other people I talk to who don't care about it. I'm just like, but the Save the Cat method, they're like, yeah, we get it. Move on.
Oh my God, that is me. I am this way about things. Yes, I totally understand. So you have written adult fiction, but also you're mostly doing like YA and middle grade now, right? What draws you to those genres? genres?
You know, originally I was drawn to YA just because it was more cinematic and fast-paced in my mind. And I started writing YA way back. I mean, had Twilight even come out yet? I don't remember.
Oh my God, we maybe Twilight had
come out. I'm trying to think of when Twilight came out. I think Twilight was out. So YA had hit its like an initial burst. And so that's probably how I even knew what it was. But I really liked how YA was fast paced. It was super plot driven, and it's changed a lot. And it's not to say that it's not fast paced anymore, because I think it is. But I just found that it fit best with the way that I wrote stories. And I loved the idea of going back to like, I love the idea of going back to my teenage years with like the perspective and quote wisdom of my adult years and being able to look at it through a new lens, because being a teenager was not easy for me. Being a 12-year-old was even worse. And so it sort of feels like a safe space to explore now that I know I've survived it. And it's yeah. like, now I can look at it with that kind of through that lens of safety and really explore like the really tumultuous times. I think that too, I've talked to other YA middle grade authors, like, and everyone sort of agrees that we write in that age because we're stuck in that age, like emotionally, psychologically, mm-hmm. I don't know. Yep. But so I find that that's really, that also kind of plays a part.
Because my follow-up question was going to be, is this inner child work? Is that what?
It might be. Yeah. But I mean, that's not to say I won't write for adults again, because for me, it's always like I chase the idea. So if I come up with an idea and I'm like, okay, what is the age of the character is the first question. Like who would best fit into this idea? And sometimes it's pretty obvious. It's like, okay, this is definitely an 11-year-old versus like a 28-year-old. Sometimes it's not as obvious. Like the book that's about to come out, Amelia Gray Is Almost Okay, I started out as a YA novel. And I wanted to write about a girl who reinvents herself three different times at a new school in order to try to fit in, to figure out where she fits in. So I had her like, you know, hanging out with the different cliques and stuff in high school. And then I realized pretty quickly that it didn't work as well as a YA. And so she's 12 and she's joining different like summer camps during the summer between class or between school. And so I just basically just retooled it because I thought this works better. And sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not so obvious.
Do you ever worry about like trusting your gut or instinct on that?
Yeah, I guess I do.
I do all the time when I change things. But you just have like an inkling in your head, right?
The second guessing, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It becomes, I think there's like a little tuning fork inside me that kind of rings really true when something feels right. When and it takes a long time to harness, to kind of hone that tuning fork. But I think when I'm onto something that I know is working, I just know it's working. And that's not to say it won't stop working when I come back again and look at it with fresh eyes. But at the moment, I can really feel if something is working. And then there's this just discordant sound if it's not working. And that's when you really have to let go and go, it's not working right now, but I will have perspective in a chapter or in 5 chapters or by the end or 3 months from now, but I will have the right perspective to make it sound right.
Well, and what I love too is, because like jumping things around, I do that, like Kat says, like I'm very extensive with like my outlines and I will pull stuff from one book and put it into another, the entire scene. So I'm like, I really like the scene, but I'm just going to move it to somewhere else. But I love too the idea of like playing with the ages, like how you do, first off, like all of us, right, grew up reading, like reading was huge for me, especially in like that middle grade era. So like to have good novels to read like is so mm-hmm. important so for true. That age group, but it also shows to be able to take one and be like from YA move it to 12 or whatever. Like every age deals with the same sort, like a different variation of the same problems.
Yeah.
And I think lots of times too in this, whatever, we're getting into that childhood stuff, right? Like we often like once we're adults, we often think like kids, like their problems don't matter, they don't whatever, but like we all are dealing with the same sort of like rejection, acceptance, problem solving.
It's kind of amazing too. And it's one of the things I love about storytelling is it's like, it's just humanity. Like we are dealing with mm-hmm. humanity. We're dealing with human issues, no matter what the age. It's just the lens through which you tell it. And so the lens ends up like shaping it slightly differently. Like for instance, insecurity, like we all deal with insecurity, and at 12 years old, it looks very different than it does at, you know, 45, but mm-hmm. it's still the same sort of root fear. And I do love looking at that through those different lenses.
So you said something that rings true for me also, which is like you chase an idea, right? Is that how your books come to you? Is it so clear as a character, or is it just kind of like a wash of an idea?
I usually write in premises before characters. And I know some people get characters and then they create premises around that character. For me, it's the opposite. It's usually like a scenario. And I tend to write, one of the things I say to writers, I have a class on how to write high concept ideas. And one of the ingredients for a high concept idea is that it has some sort of fish out of water element, which is basically where you take a character and you put them somewhere where they're not comfortable, and it makes their flaws stand out, or it makes them stand out in some way. And I think my ideas come to me in those fish out of water moments where I'm like, what if this person was put into this scenario, and then suddenly all hell breaks loose. And that really, what that is, it's the break into two beat of the Save the Cat method. It's taking an act one hero and their status quo, everything, and putting them into this whole different world or scenario or situation, and then seeing how they fare. So that's usually how ideas will come to me. It's just like that kind of juxtaposition.
That the way you tied it back into Save the Cat, I was like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. What's your Do you ever, have you done any of the personality tests? I took like a class for writers that was like based on your personality. I don't know it's the like, right, better, faster. I don't know if you've heard of that. Do you know your like, your letters?
Yeah. I think I am INFJ.
Okay. INFJ.
I'm
surprised you're not. Wait, which one? INFJ. Okay. I guess I know less about this than I thought when I answered
them. I is like internal, the F is feeler.
Yes.
I can't remember what they mean, but I'm pretty sure those are my letters.
Yeah. No, I don't remember now that I said it. Sorry.
someone listening to this, go research it and you'll know all about me.
Yeah. Give us a comment. I need to take this one. The one I know is like a single letter. So when like you list off like five, I'm like, okay, clearly I did not take the same personality test.
I think this one's like the Myers-Briggs. Myers-Briggs, okay. Is the letters. But then I took one that was sort of based on the Myers-Briggs that was... And I can't remember what it was called now, but it was a different one that gave you the letters, but then it also gave you like an avatar for those letters. So yes.
Another one.
And now I'm forgetting what my little avatar was. I think he was like I don't remember.
I do remember mine. Mine was the campaigner because I'm an Ian.
That's the same test I took. Yeah.
But the thing about those like tests is that I think they're useful insofar as that they give you like information about yourself in a quantifiable way. Well, they do kind of like go into horoscope territory sometimes, I think, which I'm a Scorpio. You, by the way. What do we have?
Cancer.
Okay. And are you an Aries?
I'm an Aries. Yes.
Aries. Yes. I know it. Okay. Yeah. I think they go into that territory, but I do think they're useful. And the class that I took, the Right, Better, Faster one, was like based on your personality type. And it was basically like, how do you collect information? How do you process it? And when you were talking, the way you were talking is very much like the intuiting things. Mm. Like I just feel something. I feel that something's right. I feel that something's wrong. And that's how I like find my answers. I too am an intuiter. If things don't feel right, then I cannot go on.
Trust your gut. You just have to.
Yes. Yeah. Another great test is it's called like the Saboteurs. It's based on a book. Someone wrote this book, something about saboteurs, and I can't remember the name of the book, unfortunately. But there's on his website, if you just Google like what's your saboteur, you'll probably find it. But he does a test where he actually will give you, he will like, the test results will show you what's your biggest like saboteur. And a saboteur is the thing that's sort of holding you back. So for me, it was like the overachiever-ness is like the thing that sabotages me. It's just that like hyperachiever or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's other ones. There's like the victim, the stickler, which is like basically perfectionist. And it'll show you in percentages like how high that saboteur is for you. I found that one really useful, maybe not as much for writing, but just like in terms of, now we're turning into a self-help podcast.
Yeah,
but,
right. Just
welcome
in life.
To therapy cast.
Yeah, just in terms of like life and just like, okay, I could put a little bit less pressure on myself.
But it's like shadow work, you know, like the worst parts of myself or the parts that I like need to accept. I think it does tie into writing and stand by that.
Our personalities go into our writing, and I think our worst traits should also go into our writing. So you know what?
Leave them there.
I guess we make really good flaws where if you're looking for character flaws. You can look at those saboteurs and see what is my character dealing with.
I actually love that. That's such a funny like inverse of what we usually get with personality. Well, because like literally the class that I took was based on all about personality strengths. Mm. So this is like the opposite. And I will say a funny thing about me is my least strong personality, like whatever you call it, is discipline. Which surprises me not at all. But it also goes to show that you don't actually need to have discipline to be productive, because I can do a lot.
Yeah, you can we can make jokes about it, about your lack of discipline in certain ways. But you do have 3 published books out. So
you have to have some discipline for that, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not discipline that makes it work though. You know what I mean? And I think maybe Jessica, I think maybe discipline's higher from you based on what I've seen in some of your lives and things like that. And that's totally fine. That's different for everybody. Definitely not for me. I'm a little bit of a free spirit sometimes. I need to feel free. And if I feel boxed in, then I will shut down. So that's why you got to really know yourself to be a writer.
Yeah.
That's a question. Do you really have to know yourself to be a good writer? Do all good writers know themselves?
I think that's a really interesting question. I can't speak for all good writers. I don't even know if I'm a good writer, but I think what helps is to know people. I think that's a really key point. Even if you're delusional about yourself, if you can really know people and know what they deal with and know how they tick, I think it's just going to come out in really good character work. You know, one of the things I break down in the Save the Cat book is you have to figure out what's wrong with your character, what's their flaw, and not only what is it, but how did it get there? Because you have to know how to fix it. And so you have to play a little bit of, psychiatrist. And so it helps to do these kinds of personality tests to learn more about what makes people tick, what their fears are, how fears become flaws, things like that. And it's just a really, I love reading self-help books for that very reason, is to just kind of get into the psyche of human beings. And God, we are complex. and the more complex your characters are, the more they're going to resonate with the complexities of the reader.
Yeah, I love it when there's a moment when I write something and a character does something, or I find a way to make a character do something unexpected, and then I realize that was the character.
Mm-hmm. I had this discussion yesterday. I was doing an interview and someone asked, are you in all your for us, romance female characters, are you in every one of those characters? I wrote them all, so they're somewhere from my brain. Some of them are more than others, but I'm like, but it does give you a chance to play with, we all have insecurities, right? We all have insecurities. I have plenty of physical ones, right? They're all into the characters, but some characters are going to have large facets of their personality are based on that or whatever. But it's it gives us a chance to play with parts of this, play with parts of ourselves.
Literally, because we write a lot of romance, so quite literally.
I'm just going to take that in there. But you can explore those different factions without having to necessarily be this is me now, this is my personality. You can put a little bit in there, but ultimately, you say too, when something happens, you're the character did that. It's so hard to explain that feeling. And we, as writers, we all get it. And most people, I think, can kind of understand it. But I've had that discussion too. You're oh, I didn't expect that to happen. But it's but you're the one that wrote it. How do you explain that when you're you're literally the person
I don't
that
know
wrote
what's
going to
happen in my dreams,
This is true.
My brain is a surprising place to be in. Yeah.
This book is my dream.
Also, as romance writers, we get people asking us questions so do you do the things that they do in the books? And that makes me hate everybody and everything. That makes me furious when I get that question. I'm sure you don't get that question, right? Because you're writing for kids.
Yeah, not quite that question, but I definitely get people mistaking me for the characters or forgetting that it's fiction. It really only happens when I know someone personally. It doesn't happen. It happens. Maybe people are out there reading it going, wow, Jessica Birdie is weird because she put this in the book. But I will have family members or friends read a book and they'll be like, really? I'm like, no, it's fiction. Obviously, have you not read any fiction before?
Yeah.
Suddenly never. No. No. You've written it.
Right. Every thriller novel is written by a serial killer. Yeah. Clearly, oh my God.
Although there was that one romance writer who did literally write a story about murdering her husband.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yes. And then she did it the way she wrote it. I was like, don't lock that woman up. Just give her her freedom. Like,
genius.
Just let her have it. You know, she worked hard on that murder. I'm kidding. That's terrible. Okay. Question. That's true. We don't know him. I kind of believe her. I kind of believe she had her reasons. Okay.
Probably.
All right. So I don't want to keep you forever. You've been with us for almost an hour, which I want to thank you for. Let me ask this question to everybody, which is two people here, not including me. What new risks have you taken in your writing lately?
Well, the novel that I'm revising right now, or getting ready to revise, which I wrote for NaNoWriMo this last year, is a brand new genre that I've never written in, and I'm not talking about it yet, so don't ask. It's a secret project that it's a genre I've wanted to write for a long time, and I feel like I've never had the courage to write it or maybe the right idea, but I came up with this idea that I was like, I have to write this. This is my opportunity to write in that genre. And so it's been a really scary, exciting process. It sort of feels like I'm brand new again, but at the same time, I'm pulling in old experiences. Like, I feel comfortable and then I'll feel completely uncomfortable. So that's something I'm dealing with right now.
Love that.
Can we ask if it's romance? Will you tell us if it's romance?
I'm not telling anybody anything.
If it's romance, I'm going to be so mad.
Oh my God. I cannot with secrets. I'm always like, I need to know immediately.
No.
Oh my God. Yeah. Fine. That's fine. When are you going to announce that? Or when does the secret come out?
Well, I think I have to sell it.
So
it hasn't been contracted. I think because it was something I wanted to try on my own without a contract. I've been writing basically under contract for over a decade now, where every project was always the next one that I was contracted to write. And that's not a complaint. That was like awesome job security all the time. But my contract, I wrote my last contracted book and I had this break in my schedule and I thought, this is my opportunity to do something totally new and just play around. And if it totally sucks, then I probably will never even show it to my agent or anyone else. but if it's something that I'm proud of, then I'll probably show my agent. If he thinks he can sell it, he'll hopefully sell it. And then I might talk about it.
I am so curious. I love the build up to it. I mean, honestly, I don't even care what it is. I just want to know now.
I respect someone that can keep a secret because I am not that person.
Oh, I can keep a secret like my life depends on it.
Oh, I cannot. I'm just
things will die, will go with me to the grave. I know not you.
No. I'm like, I found something out 5 minutes ago. I'm like, you guys, I'm not supposed to tell anyone for another 2 months, but I need to do this. This is why, like, the second I get my cover, it's going to be like revealed. Like, people that work with me, like,
word of warning, don't tell SJ anything that you don't want to get out, right?
Do not.
That's okay, though. That's okay.
Do not. But also, you can tell me right now. You can just tell me what the thing is.
But also, go ahead. Come on, bring it up.
After that, I don't think so.
No, that's
fair. I love the admission, though. I love the honesty about it.
Whatever. Hey, know thyself, right? We were just talking about that.
Right. SJ, what risks have you taken in writing lately?
Well, funnily enough, my work in progress is also a new to me subgenre, I'll call it, because it's still romance, still contemporary romance, but I'm writing mafia. Ooh. And it is, so much. It's dark. It is my first dark romance.
I know some of the details and they are dark.
You do know. And I had to ask, like, I have friends that like read about a bunch of darks. I'm like, because I've been using the hashtag dark romance and I'm like, am I lying? Is it not dark enough? Because I know I've read some like really dark shit and this is not that. But I think there's enough that I'm like, no, this qualifies. It's a lot of fun because it's different, because if you get to play with different rules. I mean, romance is very strict with like the rules you follow, which I'm happy about. I totally understand it, like safe space and like doing good things. But like when you get into that dark romance, the mafia, like you get to get away with a little bit more. I mean, because they're dark characters, like he's a bad guy. Like, there will be a list of triggers at the beginning of this, you know, book, where all my other ones are on the website, because there are some there, but they're like, minor's not the right word, but like they're not like as in your face as like what's in this book. So it's been a ton of fun. And if all goes to plan, in the next couple of days, I will finish my first draft and then I will announce a release date, because as soon as I decide on my release date, I will not be able to keep that a secret. I will just announce it. And I have my covers underway. And as soon as I get those, I will share them, because I can't keep shit to myself. And it'll be great.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thanks. So here's hoping for a March release. Fingers crossed. Well, it will be. I just need to pick a date.
March release. Oh my God. The time is going bad. I'll tell you guys my risk really quick, which is that I'm writing a book where the premise, and I'll just share it because I don't care. The premise is that a woman is working as a copywriter and she's at her job and she has to stay late because her boss is a, you know, a nightmare boss. She's like one of these nonprofit ladies who's like always in a shawl, but her boots are $10,000. I don't know if you guys know this archetype, but that's what it is. So she's working late, and as she's working late, she is like messing around the internet and she comes upon a YouTube video of a man who's talking about online journals from 10 years ago. And she's like, that's funny. I had an online journal from 10 years ago. And then he pulls up her online journal and starts talking about it. And then she looks and the video has gotten like millions and millions of views. So that's like the beginning of the book. And the risk for me is that I have to write a woman's like 16-year-old online journal, essentially, and like relate it to the story, which is a romance. And I had an online journal when I was 16. And I'm like, I got to go back and read it.
Did
and
you don't have want access to it? Do you like, is it, you can still find it?
It is 21 years old.
Wow. And
it's still there.
You should just publish that. Like,
no,
that's what you
I
should
would
just
literally rather die. Literally rather die. Oh, so that's my risk right now that I've been doing. And it feels risky because I'm like, this could go all kinds of wrong. Like, this could be all kinds of bad and stupid. But
that sounds amazing, kind of, though.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, that's my first draft that I finished that I then cut 20,000 words from. So that's fine.
I know like most of the entirety of this plot, and it's going to be a very fun book. I did not know that you were able to find your old live journal because
I'm afraid
fucking hilarious.
I'm afraid. Truly afraid.
That's fair. I would not want to read the things that I thought at that age.
Anyway, so Jessica, thank you so much for spending this entire hour with us and putting up with us. I've had the greatest time talking to you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was delightful. I love talking to you both.
Well, you're welcome to come on at any time and hang out with us whenever you'd like. And can you tell our listeners where they can find you and get all your stuff?
Oh, absolutely. So my author website is jessicabrody.com if you want to get information about my books. And then writingmastery.com is where I have my online writing school, the Writing Mastery Academy. There's also a great blog there that we put together with some awesome writing content. And yeah, I hope you check it out.
And also you have many, many books that you've published.
Lots of books.
That you will find on her website if you look.
What is the number? How many books are there?
I think the one that comes out in March, Amelia Gray Is Almost Okay, I think it's number 21 or 22.
Yeah. I sort drink
of,
now.
It's weird that's like to not know the number, but I lose track because I also did a bunch of contracted work for hire for Disney Press, where I wrote like a series of books for Disney, which I don't really count because they were someone else's, you know, IP. Mm-hmm. But I still wrote them. So I'm sort of like, do I count those or not? But if you count those, it's probably up above 30. But my own books, about 20.
That's amazing. And I want to say that in this copy of Saves the Cat I have, it says you had sold more than 15 novels at the time.
Oh,
so how old this
book is. That's how old the book is. Yeah, yeah. I've sold definitely more than that.
Yeah, you've gone on. And I recommend this book to everyone. Obviously, I'm an evangelist of this. I'm a freak. Don't worry about it. Is there anything else you'd like to add or say before we go?
No, just thank you for having me. And, you know, I just want to say writing is a journey. And don't give up on it. You know, keep going. I think the statistic is something like 95% of novels aren't finished. So beat the odds, be in that 5%.
Yes, I love that. And you know what? Before I forget, SJ, where can we find you? Let's get that.
Also, I just want to say, Kat has done a very good job of like being normal and not like super fangirling. But like from the day that I have met Kat, she has been talking about this book.
The book. I'm not a weirdo, though. I'm not.
No, I'm just saying like, so it, like that's super cool to have you here because it's something too that like I've heard about this book and the process. And Kat, you know, and I've made many a joke because I always get the names of things wrong with like the titles of the beats. I'm always like the Dawn of the Cat. And she's like, oh God damn it, shut up. I'm just like,
I love it. I would love to create like the alternate version of the beat sheet with like all the just like misnamed beats. That'd be amazing.
Just like nonsense. We've had a ton of fun with it.
Yeah, we should have just copied all the ones that you said, like Shadow of the Cat. That was a big one that you couldn't like understand.
Because I'd never heard, like, I'd never heard of, like, the different names for things until Kat, and then she, like, would tell us, so, and it was fun to harass her. So it's been great. It's been a ton of fun having you here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So as okay. I said, right, I'm SJ Tilly. You can find me at sjtilly.com. I'm actually getting my website redone by a professional, also a Jessica, nice. Not this Jessica. Very excited. It's going to make it so you can, like, purchase signed copies directly from my website, which is going to make my life so much easier. Oh my God, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. But yeah, I'm always on Instagram at SJ Tilly author, TikTok, join my Beanbag reader group on Facebook. I will have a new ARC team coming out real soon. Nero, my mafia book, we're going to revamp the ARC stuff sometime this month. So if you're interested in ARCs, make sure you're in my Facebook group, because that's where the majority of that will take place.
All right. And you can find me. I'm Kat at Catwin Author at catwinauthor.com and on most platforms at Catwin Author. And also you can find us here at Tall, Dark, and Fictional. That's Tall, Dark, Fictional with no and on Instagram and Twitter, which we never use, and TDF Pod on TikTok, which we also never use. Again, Jessica, thank you for coming. What an inspiration. And to our listeners, also, thanks for coming. And then we close out. I remember someone so bright then. I was really trying not to cry then. I was really hugging you goodbye then. You can have my MP3 when I'm dead. Play the shit and listen to what I say. Talking to me like it's all in my head. I don't wanna hurt no more, I might rest.